It's 8 o'clock in South Central Wisconsin, and you are listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison. And we are reaching the end of today's edition of Back Porch Serenade. I'd like to thank the folks at Mills Music Library for suggesting that particular Roberta Flack track and for providing the recordings of İlhan Mimaroğlu that we heard today. I'd also like to thank everybody who donated to this station during the fundraising drive, especially those who stepped up to do that during this program this past Tuesday. Once again, remember that you can still donate online and we still have matching gifts. So it's a great opportunity. Go to WORTFM and do that. This is Peter Haney saying we'll see you on the back porch next week. The 8 o'clock buzz is up next after BBC News.
Hello, I'm Justine Green with the BBC News. Armed militants in Pakistan have attacked a train with hundreds of passengers on board and have taken hostages. The driver of the Jafar Express is among those said to have been injured. According to military sources, a security operation is underway against the gunman in Baluchistan province. From Islamabad, here's Azadeh Mashiri.
Local railway officials have told us that gunmen stormed the train, and so far a militant group called the Baloch Liberation Army, a separatist group in the region, has claimed the attack. And they have warned that the civilians and those on board the train would be in harm's way should there be any sort of military response. Now, we also have a new line from the railway officials that a group of civilians, including women and children, have been seen to disembark the train and start making their way towards the nearest city of Sibiu.
The Kremlin has condemned Ukraine's largest drone attack yet on Moscow and other parts of Russia, saying it could spoil what it called a trend towards a peace settlement. The remarks come as high-level US and Ukrainian delegations hold talks in Saudi Arabia, part of Washington's attempts to engineer a ceasefire. Our correspondent Tom Bateman is at the talks in Jeddah.
The United States Secretary of State Marco Rubio swept through the lobby of the hotel here on the way to the meeting room along with his delegation. I asked him what his expectations were for the meeting. He gave a thumbs up and said, good. That gives a sense, I think, of how upbeat the Americans have appeared in the run-up to all of this. They're framing this very much as an opportunity, as they see it, to see if the Ukrainians are committed to what President Trump wants. And that is, of course, a quick truce with the Russians.
The French defense minister has dismissed the idea of demilitarizing Ukraine as part of any potential peace settlement. Sébastien Lecornu told a forum of European and NATO military chiefs in Paris that Ukraine's own army remained its main security guarantee. Russia wants Ukraine demilitarized, something Kyiv outright rejects. The Dutch defense minister, Ruben Brekelmans, also said any deal needs to guarantee long-term peace.
President Zelensky should not have to agree to a deal that would result in some sort of interbellum, with aggression constantly looming on the horizon.
The International Criminal Court in The Hague has confirmed it issued the warrant that's been used to arrest the former president of the Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte, in Manila. His daughter, Sara, who's currently vice president of the Philippines, says he's going to be flown to The Hague tonight. He's been charged with crimes against humanity in relation to his violent war on drugs while he was in office. You're listening to the latest world news from the BBC. Uganda has deployed special forces to South Sudan's capital, Juba, amid rising tensions between President Salva Kiir and his deputy, Riek Machar. The head of Uganda's army confirmed the deployment as fears grow over a possible return to civil war. Recent violence, along with the arrest of two ministers and senior military officials allied with Mr. Machar, has raised concerns about the stability of the 2018 peace deal. People in Greenland are voting in parliamentary elections that could have huge implications for its future. One of the central issues is whether the vast semi-autonomous Arctic territory pushes for independence from its former colonial ruler, Denmark. The debate was sharpened by President Trump's stated ambitions to acquire the territory for the US. Manchester United have announced they're going to build a new football stadium capable of holding 100,000 fans, the biggest in Britain. The stadium will be built next to the Old Trafford ground where they currently play and will cost $2.5 billion. And as our sports reporter Ben Croucher explains, there are some concerns about the project.
Questions still remain exactly how this project will be financed and indeed the infrastructure and the transport around it, how that will be paid for, though the British government has given it its backing. Supporters I've spoken to this morning, well, they're cautiously optimistic about the redevelopment. They're keen to see fortunes on the field revamped at the same time as the stadium.
An Indonesian TikToker has been jailed for telling a picture of Jesus on her phone to cut his hair. Ratu Talisa, a Muslim transgender woman, was responding to a comment during a TikTok live stream telling her to cut her hair to look more like a man. A court in Sumatra sentenced Talisa to almost 3 years in jail for spreading hatred under controversial online hate speech legislation. BBC News.
YWCA Madison invites you to join them to celebrate the 22nd annual Circle Fundraiser on Thursday, March 20th at the Alliant Energy Center from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. YWCA Madison is eager to gather with their community of supporters to share stories that speak to who they are and demonstrate their values of humanity, community, growth, and restoration, which are at the heart of how they move as an organization. Attending the Circle fundraiser impacts the lives of thousands of women, children, and families who are served each year through YWCA's transformational programs in housing and shelter, employment and transportation, restorative justice, and learning and movement building. More information about the Circle fundraiser and other YWCA programs and resources can be found at ywcamadison.org. That's the 22nd annual Circle fundraiser on Thursday, March 20th at the Alliant Energy Center. Keeping you informed of community events and resources, this is WORT 89.9 FM and WORTFM.org. Power boom boom, power boom boom boom, power boom boom, power boom boom boom, power boom boom, power boom boom boom, power boom. You're listening to WORT 89.9 Madison. Listener sponsored community radio.
The People's Station.
No justice! No peace! No justice! No peace! No justice! No peace! No justice!
No peace! No, I say you've been misled. You've been had. You've been took.
Man, listen, this is 2023, and we swinging chairs. I am not my ancestors, B.
Good morning, Madison.
Well, on a brighter note,
commercial break.
The government has now banned the carrying of spears.
Stop about every 1,000 miles, ain't asking too much, is it?
You might wish to stay on and listen.
It was a place where everything was legal.
I met this woman.
So if you're looking for emotional satisfaction, my advice to you is seek professional help.
Thank you for joining us live on the air.
My pleasure.
One nation under God has turned into one nation under the influence of one drug. Television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. TV, its satellite links are United States of unconsciousness. Apathetic, therapeutic, and extremely addictive. The methadone metronome, pumping out 150 channels 24 hours a day. You can flip through all of them, and still there's nothing worth watching. TV is a reason why less than 10% of our nation reads books daily. Why most people think Central America means Kansas. Socialism means un-American, and apartheid is a new headache remedy. Absorbed in this world, it's so hard to find us. It shapes our minds the most. Maybe the mother of our nation should remind us that we're sitting too close to the television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. TV is the stomping ground for political candidates.
Ear hustlers, mount up.
It's Tuesday, March 11th, 2025, and you're listening to the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz. That's Michael Franti before Spearhead, Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy, Television, The Drug of the Nation. Tara's having car trouble, your faithful engineer, John Miner. Luckily, I have this CD in my mailbox, labeled November 28th, 2006, Rain Pryor Emergency Show. So, haven't exactly listened to the whole thing, but let's give it a play. See what we find Stan Woodard talking about 18 years ago.
Okay.
Beautiful words in the world of comedy. Richard Pryor.
Good morning, ear hustlers. It's Tuesday, November 28th, 2K06, and this is your 8 o'clock buzz on WORT 89.9 FM in Madison and around the way, South Central, Wisconsin, around the way. And welcome, all you ear hustlers. I'm your host, Stan Woodard, the man who makes it all happen. John Miner's in the house this morning, and our Minister of Communications. She'll be here shortly via the Madison Metro system, and she'll be able to take your calls off air at 608-256-2001, or if you're outside of the 608 area code, 1-866-899-WORT. So, you want to give us a call because it's a special day today as we honor the birthday of Richard Pryor, which comes up this Friday, December 1st. And we know that he passed on, I believe, I want to say December 11th, just a few years ago. And we are going to talk to December 10th, 2005, he passed. And we're going to talk today to someone who knew him very well. I'm going to talk to his oldest daughter, Rain Pryor. Talk with her about her life and times and growing up with the likes of Richard Pryor. The name of the book where she discusses her life with her dad is entitled Jokes My Father Never Taught Me, Life, Love, and Loss with Richard Pryor. We're going to have her for the whole show, and I'm going to have several books to give away. Yeah. So you're going to want to keep those numbers, 1-866-899-WORT, as well as 256-2001, because we'll have at least three books to give away as you call in, and I'll have Roz handle who gets what. But we'll talk more about that. We'll have one book giveaway around the 8:30 time, and then we'll have another at the close of the show. So to give you, at least a couple chances to maybe get what I think is a very, very funny, very sad writing about one of the greatest comedians of all times, and how she dealt with that as being the daughter of one of the greatest comedians of all time. Interesting stuff. And it's all going to be for you on the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz. So, with that, we're just going to get started because I'm going to have Rain on for the entire show. She lives out in the Baltimore, Maryland, on the East Coast resident. So she should be waiting by her phone. We'll play a little music. And when we come back, we'll start our interview with Rain Pryor. It's all for you. It's your Tuesday, 8 o'clock buzz.
Are we really happy here with this lonely game we play? Looking for words searching but not finding, understanding anywhere. We're lost in a masquerade. This lonely game we play. Hearts of weeping disappear every time I see your eyes. No matter how hard I try, understand the reasons that we carry on this way. We're lost in a masquerade.
Back at you this morning. It's the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz on WORT 89.9 FM in Madison and around the way. Welcome all you ear hustlers from South Central Wisconsin, as far as North Viroqua, and as far south as Beloit, Janesville, and to the east of us, Lake Mills and Sun Prairie, and maybe even Jefferson County. Welcome, and to the west of us, Baraboo and other points beyond, we welcome you to this edition of the Tuesday Buzz. As you know, this time of the year, right around the 1st of December, the Tuesday Buzz always honors. At one time, we honored the life of Richard Pryor. We still do that, but now we also honor his memory since he passed, as we know, back in, 2005, I believe, on December 11th or 10th. And being from Danville, Illinois, I always claimed him as a homeboy. Peoria up the way from Danville, and in a similar age category, Richard, a few years older than me, but growing up with his comedy and his intelligence and his blackness, if you will, with his comedy, he's always been a part of the Tuesday Buzz, and it's now a pleasure and a privilege to have on the show this morning, for the entire show, by the way, someone who knows a little bit about Richard Pryor, happens to be his oldest daughter, Rain Pryor. And let me welcome Rain. Welcome, my sister, to Madison, Wisconsin.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you this morning, and thank you for sharing some of your morning with our listeners. I call my listeners ear hustlers. So thank you so much for sharing some of your time with our ear hustlers this morning. Let me give a little bit about who you are. I think it's important that folks know you are a dynamic speaker, a spokesperson, an award-winning actress, a singer, a writer, comedian, and producer. And you've written and performed in a hit one-woman stage show based on your life, Fried Chicken and, how do you say that?
Latkes.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a minute, that part of your life. You also headlined as a comedian at comedy clubs and the famous Comedy Store on the Sunset Strip, where you, as well as your father, were the first ever father-daughter team to have both headlined at the Comedy Store. And Rain, before we get started about your life, because I touched on the Comedy Store, and we know what's been in the papers regarding Michael Richards and his rant and raving at the Comedy Store with the N-word and other things that he said. And we all know that Richard put the N in N-word early on in his career. And then when he came back from Africa, he changed. He realized that the use of that word was derogatory, and he stopped using that word. What do you think your dad would say about the Michael Richards situation?
You know, I think actually what my dad would say is that the man was definitely angry, and of course he probably thinks that way. You know?
Well, there sure has been a lot of controversy over it, and I couldn't help but think of your dad and the way he used the word. It was, as far as I was concerned, it was used in an affectionate manner, a term of really endearment. Although that,
absolutely,
although that word carries a history of negativity, but he used it like many of us have as we've grown up as a term of endearment, and and use it very well. But okay. Let me get off first with you dedicated. I always like to start sometimes with the dedication that an author makes on your book. And once again, it's Jokes My Father Never Taught Me, Life, Love, and Loss with Richard Pryor. And you dedicate, let me read this quickly here. I dedicate this book to the loving memory of my father, Richard Pryor, to my brothers and sisters whose voices matter, and to my mother, Shelley, just you and me against the world. Talk a little bit about just you and your mom against the world.
Well, you know, my mom has been her entire life a fighter, you know, and I think, you know, just like I talk about in the book, did the best that she could to try to, you know, have us survive, you know, and it, and it, when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, it really was my mother, you know, that struggled and went through a lot of pain to get through.
You know, and you discuss some of that pain, yours as well as your mom's and maybe even other family members in the pages of this book. In the introduction, you indicate that life certainly wasn't boring living with Richard Pryor. It was one hell of a ride. You were a little tyke. Let's talk about your coming into this world at a time when this country was going through a cultural change, a cultural identity awakening, or a time when youth were redefining their values and what this country should be about. And you were born as a, was it a love child, should I say that?
No, because a love child really indicates a child that wasn't wanted.
What I was
a child born into an ideal that my parents had, that my birth was going to change America. That having a child of mixed race would change the thought that America was having about black, white, Jews, blacks, and all the above.
And let's talk a little bit about your mixed heritage. On your mom's side, let our ear hustlers know the heritage of your mom.
My mom's family is Russian and Polish and Jewish, by way of Brooklyn, New York. and my dad's side is Native American and black.
From Peoria, Illinois. okay, growing up with that mixed heritage, as you discuss in your book, you were still a young tyke. I think 4 years old when you first really had an opportunity to associate with your dad. Is that?
Yeah, that was the first time I met my dad. Is at the age of four. I mean, he was around until I was 6 months old, but I don't really have a memory or recollection of that, as I do being able to meet him for the first time and being at his house and, you know, having also at the same time meeting my older sister, Elizabeth, and my older brother, Richard, and then my eldest sister, Renee, at the time.
And there was a time when you were, what, around, you stayed with your dad. From time to time, you also met the woman who raised him, his grandmother, your great-grandmother.
Mama.
Yes. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, at the meeting at the house, you know, Mama was there the first day, and here I meet this very larger-than-life woman, and I know her as Mama. That's what we called her, but I also know she's my grandmother. And later to, you know, find out that she raised my father when his mother left, and found out that my dad grew up, you know, in a brothel,
mm-hmm.
and Mama ran it,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, just like my Uncle Dickie was one of the pimps, and that's just his life and the way it was.
You know, you say in the book, whores were part of our lives, I guess. They'd always been part of Richard and Mama's lives. Going back to the old days in Peoria, Daddy had lived in a whorehouse then, and in some ways, he was still living in a whorehouse.
Absolutely.
Or to look at it another way, he had been carrying the whorehouse on his back his whole life and brought it with him all the way from Peoria. You talk about a story when you were around 8 years old, around Thanksgiving time.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about. Why don't you let our ear hustlers know about that story?
Well, it's like it's Thanksgiving time, everyone's around the table, and I'm walking to the table past my dad's bedroom, and I hear some women talking about, you know, pain, blah, blah, blah, where's the money? And I walked right up to the table where my dad was and the rest of the family. I'm like, Dad, the whores need to be paid.
and
everyone kind of was in shock. And then, of course, in the prior way, we, you know, everyone broke out and laughed.
You know, talk a little bit about that. You know, a lot of times as children, at the time we go through things, the importance of those times or the effect of those times don't really become clear to us until we get older. And as you look back during this time, I'm keeping this now, you're 8, you're 9, you're 10, you're a young person. Talk a little bit about how you look back on that and some of the effects it may have had on you.
You mean growing up in that environment?
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, as a kid, I was very, you know, precocious, tenacious. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to know. I always spoke my mind. And so being around it, I don't think I really understood the impact mm-hmm. of life. Like, when I try to explain to people even the struggles in the house, like watching the drugs and knowing most of the women there were hookers, or, you know, you kind of just go, okay, this is everyone's life. You don't know that there's something different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there's almost like, okay, well, this is the way it's going to be. It's the way it is. So I learned how to, you kind of learn, at least I had to learn how to survive within mm-hmm. the ever-changing emotions of my dad,
mm-hmm.
the ever-changing, you know, circumstances around me, the people coming and going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you learn very early on no one sticks around.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's constant change. Money is a transaction. And you sort of have this belief in your head. And any time you get to step out of it, maybe, like for myself, it was about, you know, for me, I always wanted to be a performer, but I think performing was the one thing that seemed stable.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was the one thing constant, at least in my dad's life.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about your mother very admirably, and you indicate that she was quite a revolutionary, if you will, in her thinking, and she helped push her dad towards his comedy that turned from, you know, strictly giving, you know, talking about humanity in a way that was funny, to really putting some meaning about humanity to his comedy and becoming, you know, talking about the issues affecting the African-American community and putting it in
right.
humor. Talk a little bit about your mom's effect on your dad
and his
politics.
Mm-hmm. My mom's politics started early on when, you know, she realized, you know, around the age of 16 and 17 years old that the world wasn't as perfect as it was supposed to be in the 50s and 60s,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that not everyone had it going on and not everyone was considered equal, and that really affected my mother's thinking and way of life, especially because she grew up not only with her family but then moving in with a Cuban family, you know, and then learned how to speak Spanish fluently, you know,
mm-hmm.
and sort of her mindset was a lot different than a lot of people, especially being white and Jewish at the time, was
mm-hmm.
you know, her thinking was far more progressive, mm-hmm. and so by the time when she had met my dad, and my dad was still in the midst of doing his Cosby-esque type of comedy,
mm-hmm.
you know, my mom knew he had a different voice and was encouraging him to sort of fulfill that voice and to come out with that voice. And together, part of that was them creating, you know, this film, Uncle Tom's Fairy Tales, and my mom putting the money that was hers into this movie.
Mm-hmm.
you know, which never came out and was eventually pretty much destroyed, except for maybe, you know, a couple of scraps here and there of very strange footage. But, you know, she was behind him in his in who he was as a man. You know, wasn't about it wasn't about him trying to conform to be something. My mom wanted him to step out of the box and not have to be like everybody else, because that was the purpose even of my birth, was to help to change that.
Well, it's no question that Richard Pryor is an original. And I'm talking to someone who knows Richard Pryor. It's his daughter, Rain Pryor. We're discussing her life and times and thoughts and pain and happiness that's contained in a book called Jokes My Father Never Taught Me, Life, Love, and Loss with Richard Pryor. Rain, what about this as a young girl, and I'm talking about now 10, 11, 12. You say in the book that you had this sense of family and you went to school and you felt like everybody else. Most of the students were mom and dad were divorced and this and that. And, you know, how was it being the daughter of a very famous comedian at the time, during his zenith? How was it to be his daughter out in public and when you met other kids your age during those times?
You know, like I said, at the beginning it was sort of like, okay, this is just my dad, blah, blah, blah, and this is supposed to be normal. You know, and then you learn, you know, that everyone seems to know who your dad is. You know, and you're learning to share him with the rest of the world.
Well, there's no question that there's no question that everyone takes a piece of Richard, because he struck that type of common denominator in all in all human beings. He had an ability to do that, and the good times as well as the bad. Which is a part of life. We all have our ups and downs in our life. I mean, no more different than anyone else. His just happened to be on the front page.
Absolutely.
But many of us have family members that go through some of the similar struggles that Richard went through. What was that like for you, especially, you know, some of the things that you saw behind closed doors, but then the things that the public was able to see because he had to go to the emergency room?
Well, you know, it's like, you know, 1980s when, you know, he tried to kill himself. You know, the whole world knew about it. You know, and it was all over the place, and it's not something that's secret. So here I am, a 10-year-old going to school, and all the kids in school know about it, and you get teased about it. You know, and it's embarrassing. You know, I was really angry with my father for, you know, one, doing that to himself, but, you know, as a kid, of course, because it's about you as a kid, for placing me in that position, you know, of having to endure that pain.
And, you know, you said in the book, you said, I learned a lot about parenting from my father. If I'm ever lucky enough to have kids, I'll do exactly the opposite of what my father did, and I'll know they'll turn out fine. Just embellish that thought a little bit. Would you talk a little bit about what you meant by that in the book?
Well, it's like, you know, there's no mistaking, and I think, you know, he would definitely have agreed with me, and has agreed with me, you know, that he wasn't the best father, and that life in his household, period, was unstable at best. And definitely dysfunctional. And I think, you know, for me, and coming to understand who my parents are and how they lived, I've taken away things going, okay, well, I would want to create a more stable environment for my child, and they wouldn't be growing up around, you know, an underbelly of life and figure that's to be normal.
And as we know, I don't know of any perfect family in this society, number
Absolutely.
One. We all have our...
Neither do I.
I tell you, sister girl. So in no way are we condemning or anything your life or what you grew up in, because who knows what other folks have had to go through. Some much worse, for that matter. But what about a grandma or mama, as she called? She was a very strong person, unapologetic about the lifestyle that she lived. Talk a little bit about, because she had a strong influence. I mean, even as you talk in the book, when she was around, Richard was a different person to a great extent.
Absolutely. You know, Mama ruled the household with an iron fist, the Pryor household with an iron fist when she was around. And she told my dad the truth. She told my dad who she liked and who she didn't like and why he needed to be careful. and what he needed to do. And, you know, most of the time my father would listen or try to do things at least behind her back, you know. And, you know, she just had this really influential presence in my father's life, but then also to understand that she wasn't apologetic for the fact that she was a madam because, you know, her philosophy is, this is how I raised this family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is how you were able to have clothes and shoes mm-hmm. and, you know, and function mm-hmm. in the world is because of what I was doing. And there was, and also politically at the time, there was nothing wrong with mm-hmm. it because, mm-hmm. you know, if, and the philosophy, and I talk about this even in my solo show, that Mama would make comments on, you know, at the time, like, white men would rape black women and try, you know, and steal it. So
mm-hmm.
this time, why not make them pay for it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was a vindication mm-hmm. in a way.
You know, there's no question about that. And my mom and grandmother have passed, but my grandmother and my grandfather on my mom's side was outside of Danville, Illinois, Paris, Illinois, as a matter of fact, and Muncie, Indiana. And, you know, they were involved in similar activities. And my grandmother was involved as a madam in the house with my grandfather, and eventually moved out to California and changed their lifestyle. But, you know, it just seems to be at the time. We've got to look at things at the time that this country was coming through and not make a value judgment on it, but try to understand some of the hurt and pain and what folks had to do in order to make a living, rightly or wrongly, as we want to look at it now.
Absolutely.
There's no question about it. You know, well, Rain, you're going to stay with me. We've talked a little bit. We've talked about some of your past growing up. We want to talk about you, some of the things that you've accomplished and you went on to become successful in your life and continue to be successful in your life. I want you to stay with me. I'm going to take a break for about 4 or 5 minutes, and then we'll come back and continue our discussion. Is that good?
Okay.
All right, sister girl. Thank you so much. It's Rain Pryor. She's with me discussing jokes my father never taught me. Life, love, and loss of with Richard Pryor. Stay with us. It's the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Just Coffee, Madison's Fair Trade Roasting Cooperative. Just Coffee buys fair trade coffee to ensure equitable conditions for coffee grower cooperatives around the world, and roasts locally in small batches. More information at 204-9011 or on the web at justcoffee.coop.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and TNW Ensemble Theater, presenting Scammed, a new comedy running March 13th through March 23rd at TNW Ensemble Theater, 1957 Winnebago Street. When a freelancing editor falls for a classic scam, she assumes the amoral alter ego of Helen Wheels to get even. Tickets are available at the door with cash or check or online through Ticket Tailor. More information is available by calling 608-770-0826.
Listening to an archive broadcast of Stan Woodard talking to Rain Pryor from November 2006. You can give Kathy a call at 256-2001 if you want to comment. Unfortunately, there's no books to give away today. We're in the middle of our online low-profile pledge drive. Help us keep great radio like this on the air with a donation at WORTFM.org. Or I suppose maybe Kathy would take a pledge if you called. But I don't know if there's pledge cards out there. In any case, back to Stan Woodard and Rain Pryor from 2006 in just a moment.
You're breezing this morning with George Benson. It's the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz. We're coming to you live from the studios of WORT 89.9 FM in Madison and around the way. Welcome again, you ear hustlers, to as we wrap up this edition of the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz. But we've got a ways to go till 9 a.m. So, and we're going to finish up a conversation we're having with Rain Pryor. She's gracious enough to give us some time this morning to talk about her book, Jokes My Father Never Taught Me, Life, Love, and the Loss, with Richard Pryor. Rain, as I said before we broke, I wanted to talk about you. And there's some, you know, all of our lives have pain. But in your life, there was a time, I guess, on two occasions that you wanted not to stick around this old earth anymore. You attempted to take yourself out. Talk about what was going on at those times.
Well, one is, actually, I was really young. I was 9 years old, mm-hmm. and I guess, you know, you just have enough, and mm-hmm. that's what it felt like. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, you know, putting a plastic bag over my head. Mm-hmm. Now, the mm-hmm. irony in all that is here I am with a plastic bag over my head trying to take my life, and my mother comes in and catches me and is upset by it, and I continue to have the plastic bag over my head, however, lifting it up so I can argue with her. And then to place it back over my head. And she proceeded to call the suicide hotline, where they proceeded to put us on hold. So, and we laugh about it. And as painful as it, you know, at the time, and you go, oh, my goodness, it's also, you know, it's just ironic and ends up being funny, mm-hmm. In a sense. And then I was 16 years old. It was that awkward, you know, teenage period of just feeling like I just don't belong here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a very difficult time in my life, just emotionally with both my parents, and I just wanted to give up and, you know, and decided to take Tylenol. You know, and I look back on those times and just think, I mean, one, obviously, it wasn't meant for me to leave the planet.
Amen.
I mean, that's just a given.
Amen.
So, mm-hmm. you know, you definitely don't do that again. Now, do I get depressed? Yes. Do I get upset? Yes. Is that something that enters my head as a thought or the solution for it? Not at all.
You know. Yeah, there's no question. I mean, we all have pain in our lives, and
absolutely.
There are times it affects us in different ways. But one of the things on the bright side, this is what you said in your book. You said, the truth is, I have had wanted to be a performer ever since I was born. When I was only 4 or 5, Daddy gave me a rainbow-colored Afro wig and a microphone and told me to go wild. And when I was 6, I got a small part in an amateur production of The Wizard of Oz. So this show business bug was kind of ingrained in you, genetically passed on, huh?
You know, I think in some cases it definitely was. I mean, I don't know what else I would do other than perform. You know, I've gone to school. I've worked as a counselor, a drug counselor. I worked, you know, with schizophrenics. I've done all that kind of stuff, but I always get pulled back to performing and theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that came about, I mean, your career, some would think that, oh, wow, Richard Pryor, your daddy, you got it made, girl.
Right.
You just jump out there and, you know.
And go, and you're
yeah,
there, right.
Yeah, and it didn't work for you that way, did it? Talk a little bit about
Not
that.
At all. You know, I mean, look, I was very lucky that I got out of high school, and the first thing I ever auditioned for, I got right away. You know, but mm-hmm. I assumed that's how it was.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know there was a difference. I didn't know there was a process. There's an audition. There's an elimination. I also didn't realize how cruel people could be.
Mm-hmm.
And because I didn't look like everyone else, and I was still going through that awkward young adult, trying to find my look and even my body, mm-hmm. you know, got a lot of comments of like, you know, wow, she can act her butt off, but boy, is she not pretty. Mm-hmm. Or she's ugly, and I've had mm-hmm. casting people tell me I should have my jaw reconstructed so I don't look so much like my dad. And, you know, and it was mm-hmm. very difficult and very, very painful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my self-esteem went down, which is why I got out of acting for a while and then proceeded to go back to school and, you know, then work as a counselor and, you know, that kind of thing. Because I was like, all right, I'll be a therapist, you know. And then got pulled back into acting when I, you know, when I started to sing and do a cabaret show at a friend of mine's restaurant. And I was just about to get married at the time, and my husband at the time was encouraging me to, you know, do what I love to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went ahead and did that.
You know, Rain, that's so important. What you talked about, the how society wants to evaluate or define who we are by how we look, or do we look a certain way, or do we talk a certain way. And so
right.
many young girls get caught up in that, even now with the hip-hop generation. What would you say to young girls about what it takes to continue to go after that dream, even though there are those around you who want to put you down because you may not look like them, or not
right.
not be the size, or have the hips, or have the breasts, or have the lips, whatever it is.
You know what I say? Mm-hmm. I say that you go for it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I also say that you have to be realistic with yourself and to recognize what your talents are, even in any field that you're in, to recognize where you're the strongest and be honest about it. You know, it's like you can't be like the people who go and think they can sing on American Idol and they really can't. Do you know
Hello.
What I mean? It's
Hello.
One thing to have a dream, but it's another thing. You have to really know what you're good at, mm-hmm. and no matter what anyone says, and it's going to be difficult, you got to go for it and go forward anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because the rest will follow.
You know, you got some good advice from Mario Van Peebles.
Melvin
Van Peebles, yes. Right.
The Which old was man. To get off my butt and do it for myself.
you saked that in there, and you decided to do that, didn't you? Talk
Absolutely.
About that progression as you began to go ahead and take some self-determination and make it happen for you.
Absolutely.
What did you do?
And went ahead and wrote a solo show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, having no idea that it would be successful, but just to do it and put myself out there.
Now, what you did, though, this is a show we're talking about, fried chicken and...
Latkes.
Latkes. Talk about that. Talk about the meaning of that, your two different ethnicities coming
right.
together there.
Well, you know, it's two food groups that are well-established within those communities.
Yes.
Fried chicken... and latkes, which is the potato pancake.
Okay.
You know,
and
in the Jewish community.
Jewish community, that's correct. And fried
you know,
chicken, obviously, the African-American community.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the name within itself, you know, helps to just establish, okay, well, this is what the show is. And then within that, I talk about my life growing up, being black and Jewish, and the struggles I faced, and the different viewpoints of my family. And I talk about, you know, my dad...
But you play different roles. I think you play Miss Jackson. There's a Miss
yeah.
Jackson in there I read about. What's her name? Vanita?
Juanita.
Juanita is
a
Juanita.
I play a character, yeah, of a girl I grew up with.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I play several different characters,
mm-hmm.
including myself, and I sing within the show as well. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, it's yeah.
How did that show help you? A lot of times people say that there's a cathartic feeling of being able to get that out on stage and play some of the characters that really have some truth in the hurt and pain and
right.
happiness that
right.
you have felt growing up.
I think,
tell
you
us
know,
about that.
I think really where it has affected me doing the show is the fact that I did it regardless of what anyone else has said.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There are many people, you know, there are a lot of people who say you can't do it, it's not good enough, it's blah, blah, blah, and the point is, but I'm doing it anyway, and it's successful.
I mean, very successful. I mean, you
yeah.
got awards for that play, standing
yeah.
ovations for that play. That had to renew your self-esteem. Not that you needed that, but in a sense, it's very, you know, it had to push you continue to push you forward, knowing that by following your star, that you know, you can be what you want to be in this
business. Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, and that what's the greatest thing about working on a show like this, and it's your own, is that it keeps evolving and changing, and it's only gotten better. Now, mm-hmm. you know, do I think it's the perfect show? No, I mean, I think it has a ways to go, and there's even deeper levels for it to be at. But the point is, no matter what, I continue to do what I can do to make it the best that it can be.
No question.
And I think in life, that's what you need to do.
No question about it. And, you know, and I've got to touch on the fact so many, I'm gonna switch. Was you still with me?
Yep.
Okay, good. I can barely hear you.
I know. I can barely hear you.
I got you
too.
Now. How are we going now? We're okay now? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great. And we've got just about 8 or 9 minutes to go. You know, living with your father after he suffered, was diagnosed with MS. Right. I've had a mother-in-law who went through similar situations with MS. She's since passed. And my wife's family being with her and seeing her be the vibrant person that she was to not being able to express herself. But, you know, talk about that, because a lot of families go through that. It's not just the Richard Pryor of the world who gets afflicted by this terrible disease. There are so many others that are afflicted by that. How did you talk a little bit about dealing with that situation, seeing your dad less than what you remember him to be on the stage and in right. your life?
You know, it was difficult to watch my dad go through all these feelings, you know, and the physical elements of what comes with someone sometimes who has the kind of progressive form of MS which my father had, mm-hmm. to watch the disability rapidly take control of his body was one difficult. It was more difficult for me to watch him struggle through mm-hmm. the difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
Of that, if that makes any kind mm-hmm. of sense, mm-hmm. because I know for him, you know, his whole purpose is to walk on that stage, is to strut and tell stories, and is a physical human being, and then all of a sudden not to be able to be that physical human being, and then slowly, you know, over mm-hmm. time, the last thing then to be taken from you is your roar, is your voice, mm-hmm. is the thing that, you know, really hits home. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was hard for me as his child because I want to fix it. I want to make it better. I don't want you to have to be in pain ever.
You know, no, there's no question. And you went on to do something about this disease. You talk about your duties, your spokesperson, and talk a bit about what you decided.
You know, someone came up to me actually. Someone came up to me and asked me. You know, they said, "We really like you to, you know, be a spokesperson for a new campaign that we're running with family and friends." And, you know, my focus was about, you know, the early detection and treatment for MS, which I'm a big supporter of. And as I began to go out and speak and tell my story of what it was like to have a father with MS, mm-hmm. It developed into me even reaching out further with the National MS Society. And became, you know, more about, well, I'm showing up as well to help raise money for research. And I got very involved in the research end of it, which I still am involved in. And I actually do this all over the world instead of just in the United States. I'm talking about MS all over the world and talking with scientists and going to things to figure out how we can find a cure for this disease.
That's a beautiful sister girl.
Thank you.
Really, that's what it's all about, trying to give back and make someone else's life a little better.
Absolutely.
You know, and as we get ready to wind up, I haven't asked you anything about your brothers, your sisters and things. I mean, you're not just you.
I'm not just me. There's a whole mm-hmm. gaggle of little Pryors. You know, I mean, that's the one thing I'll tell you for Dad. He didn't have the responsibility of children, but he had a lot of them, and you know what? They're amazing. They're amazing young people and older people. He had some great kids.
I you know, that's beautiful to hear. And as I understand in the book, you take opportunities from time to time to come together and, you know, and celebrate family.
Absolutely.
Well, Rain, we're going to get ready to wind this interview up. Is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners out there? There are many people, as you know, who hung on every word of what your father had to say on stage, as well as his book, Prior Convictions, and yourself. Maybe a last comment to put everything in perspective, as you see it from your heart.
I think to put it in perspective is that regardless, I mean, especially in speaking of my dad, regardless of the fact that at times he could be very flawed, or our parents in general can have flaws and make several mistakes, that they truly are our parents. And when we can find forgiveness and understanding for who they are, we're able to move on in our own lives.
I couldn't have said it any better, sister girl. I want to thank you ever so much, Rain Pryor.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Taking some time. The book, Jokes My Father Never Taught Me, Life, Love, The Loss, with Richard Pryor. And it is published. I always like to give out the publisher. Let's see. A Regan book of all names. Of all names, a Regan book. Part of HarperCollins Publishers, and we recommend it. Good Christmas gift. And I've got some more to give away after we close this interview. So, Rain, you have a blessed holiday season, dear.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yep. Rain Pryor, Richard Pryor's daughter. What a beautiful interview, I think. Stay with us. We'll close the show and give away another book. Ah, it's about that time. I wouldn't do that in front of Rain now. I said, Daddy, I ain't gonna mess that up. I enjoyed talking to Rain Pryor and life and times with her dad as we dedicate today's show to the memory and life and times of Richard Pryor. His birthday is December 1st, this Friday. And how appropriate to be able to have the opportunity to talk to his daughter, Rain. And you heard it here on WIT, a Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz, you understand. Coming up next, then, is Insurgent Radio Kiosk, and then John Fapke with Pastures of Plenty. You know, that's that good time folk music that John always plays. And always remember, those who profess to favor freedom and yet depreciate agitation are like people who want crops without plowing up the ground. On behalf of my engineer, John Miner, thank you, John O. Another yeoman's job, sir. And our Minister of Communications, Roz, thank you so much, dear. I know I put you to work, and you still got one task to do. Not until I say peace can you call in now. And I'm your host, Stan Woodard, saying live your life like it's golden. Peace.
Been listening to an archive broadcast. Stan Woodard talking to Rain Pryor, November 28th, 2006. Sorry if you want a book or to hear from John Fabke, but that was 18 years ago. This is the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz on WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin on March 11th, 2025. Coming up after this, 3 hours of folk music on Green Morning Radio with Brian Hirsch. Hear him on the lobby right after the Insurgent Radio Kiosk. See you next week.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 Madison. Listener sponsored community radio.
All power to the people!
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Tuesday, March 11th.
This is Bird Note. The world is full of poisonous creatures. Some butterflies, beetles, and frogs use bright colors to warn birds and other predators that they're full of toxins. But you might be surprised to learn that some birds are poisonous too. The hooded pitahui is a bird that lives in New Guinea and eats a toxic beetle. The pitahuis aren't sensitive to the beetle's toxin, so they can accumulate large amounts of it in their skin and feathers. Scientists examined the chemicals from pitahui feathers and identified the same type of toxin found in poison dart frogs. Like the birds, the frogs may also gain their chemical defenses from eating insects. But pitahuis aren't the only birds that pack a toxic punch. When ruffed grouse eat a plant called mountain laurel, they pick up a poisonous compound that can make them an unappetizing meal for a fox or a human hunter. And quail in the Eastern Hemisphere sometimes snack on hemlock, turning them into a very upsetting dinner item. Many predators like to eat birds.